You are entering the Royals Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to a AL Championship edition of the Pine Tar Podcast. I am David Leskey, joined by Clint Scholes. Here in a little bit, we will talk with Royals Assistant General Manager J.J. Piccolo. So make sure you stay tuned for that. He'll talk a little World Series, a little offseason, a little Lorenzo Cain Gold Glove snubs, and yeah, good stuff. So stay tuned for that. But first, I guess we'll bring in Clint right now. Clint, how are you? How are you holding up after the loss?
I'm getting there. I'm doing better, doing a lot better. I think the Gold Gloves tonight helped a little bit, even though the main man got snubbed. I mean,
you know, it's let's talk about that real quick. I the rule is just dumb. I think that there is a rule that says you have to play 75% of your innings at one position. And so technically the Royals shifting around at the end of games, and also Lorenzo Cain's injury earlier in the year, ended up hurting him. But look, that guy is a stud. He is, if not the best defensive outfielder in baseball, one of the top five. And the fact that he wasn't even a finalist means you gotta revamp your award a little bit more. It's never ending process. They've made it better. They've gotten better with it. So just keep evolving it, and then retroactively give Adam Jones a Gold Glove to Lorenzo Cain.
That should happen, but thankfully the guys at Fielding Bible, they knew they didn't want to make that mistake, so they created a new spot for Cain.
I believe that's called the Lorenzo Cain Award.
yes, and I don't want to call it despicable, but it kind of stinks because you get a Tampa Bay Rays right fielder who played less innings in right field than Cain played in center.
Yeah.
And he's eligible. Well, that doesn't make any sense. I mean,
it's dumb.
It's a stupid rule. And I think Cain showed a national audience what his defense was like in center field. And him and the rest of the team about brought a World Series championship to Kansas City. And it was close. Oh. It was so close. I don't know what you were doing. I was screaming for Alex to run. Screw.
I was too. Even I knew at the time it was a bad idea because my seats, there's a lot of things my seats aren't great for, but my postseason seats were perfect to get a view of that because I'm like right behind third base basically where I was. And so I'm watching this whole thing unfold. I'm watching Crawford get the ball. I'm watching Gordon get to third. And even though I saw Crawford get the ball as Gordon was getting to third, I was still going, run, 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 and, you know, just – going absolutely nuts. I didn't yell that much, but that play was what made me hoarse the next day. And oh, I just wish he would have. Oh, I don't know. I'm glad he didn't go because at least they had a shot. But man,
it would have been crazy though because the ball's wet. Crawford might throw it. It might skip. Buster might not dig it. And what if there's a collision? Because at that point, Alex. You can forget the rules. You can toss all that out. Alex is mowing him over.
Yeah, they're not going to end a World Series on that.
No.
I don't. Maybe they would. Maybe they would, but they shouldn't.
It would have been the perfect ending. It kind of, you know, I don't agree with Kevin Keatsman much, but when he said that the next day, that would have been the perfect ending to the season. Either he gets hit, he gets nailed at home, or he scores. And then the Royals lose later or they win later. It would have just been the perfect, like, ending for the Royals. You know, because they got to the divisional round by going all out, by running and just sending him. It just stinks. And to know that this team that we follow and we love so much came 90 feet away from – sending it maybe to extra innings or maybe winning it in the bottom of the ninth. It was It was truly heartbreaking, but man, what a lovely postseason run, and what a great team! And this will be one of those teams that you remember for forever.
Oh yeah, I mean you hear stories all the time. I mean, I do at least as a younger fan, and I say younger as I'll be turning 30 here in a couple months. That's crazy, but you hear all these stories about 1985 and the 70s and getting past the damn Yankees and all that and. They're great stories, and I love hearing about, the 1980 team that my dad always says anybody could have managed. Jim Frey had nothing to do with that, and the 1977 team that was too good to lose and then lost, and then the 1985 team. Of course, all the stories about the World Championship and coming back from 3-1 deficits in both rounds and all that, and the stories are great, and I love hearing them, but I wanted my own story, and now – this whole generation of Royals fans has it. Now we can tell people about the time the Royals ran through the American League without losing a damn game. And we can tell people about Lorenzo Cain playing center field with a migraine and making two unbelievable catches in the ALDS. And we can tell people about Eric Hosmer's backflip and about Billy Butler's stolen base and about Jerod Dyson on third base during the wild card game, and about Salvador Perez swinging at a pitch he had no business swinging at and hitting the ball down the third base line to win that wild card game. And then we can tell people about Hunter Strickland yelling at Salvador Perez for waiting for his teammate at home plate, and about Jeremy Guthrie pitching a fantastic game in game three to give the Royals a series lead, a World Series lead. And these are our stories now, and we have them to tell everybody. And it's not all about the no outs to go and Frank White hitting cleanup in the World Series and all that. We have new stories, and hopefully we'll have more new stories coming up in the next few years. Because I'll tell you right now, we're not going to have another 29 years to wait. I can promise you that this team is on the right track. Maybe 2015 won't be the year. We'll obviously have to see, but. Right now, we are at the start of stories, and I'm just so happy that we don't have to listen to those stories from the 70s and 80s. We've got our own now, and that's pretty cool.
I agree, and you're right. We're not going to have to wait 29 years, but I don't think the Giants and the Cardinals are the blue are that regular. I just hope this team can get back. I think they'll definitely be back for a playoff run. I'm just not so sure about the World Series. That's what's thing. Yeah. It's an unknown. It's a true unknown. But I think this team is in very good position in the American League. I look at the teams in that league, and many of them are aging teams. And the Royals right now are in a good spot. And so they just need to add a piece here, make some tweaks. They need players to perform better in the during the season, so they don't have to play in a wild card game. And but I think that's all very probable, and I don't want to say it's likely, but I wouldn't bet against it. That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, the crazy thing is, you talk about past off seasons. You look at the roster and you say, okay, well, if they make this addition, then I think they could probably be pretty decent and win 83, 84, 85 games. Well, I'm looking at a roster right now that has its fair share of holes. Don't get me wrong. But I'm looking at a roster right now, and I think, okay, if they just replace those guys with, a decent player here and there, and maybe a minor leaguer up from AAA or something, this team right now I look at could win 82, 83 games. And that's without not knowing what's in right field, what's a DH, what's the fifth starter, not necessarily the number five starter, but the final starter in the rotation, how the bullpen's going to shake out. I mean, this team looks pretty solid for next year already, and yes, there are holes to fill, and that's going to be fascinating to me, how they fill those holes, what they do, all that. But this team is already looking pretty sharp.
Yeah, they are, and I think that holes to fill, that's baseball nowadays with teams locking up young players, and the free agent market just isn't out there to go out and grab players and fill your roster completely full. And I think you've seen that with the Detroit Tigers, New York Yankees, these big market teams. There's nobody to go out and nab and have a complete 25-man roster. So then it leans over to youth and the Royals having youth and defense, and teams like that, I think, are going to be playing catch up. And I think, you know, maybe the Yankees, they're just getting out in front of it and they're going to go out and spend some money this offseason. But I think a little bit of what they said with not going to chase the big market, James Shields, John Lester's, I think a little bit of that is that they watched this postseason and said, we can build another way.
Well, and the thing about that, the thing about pitching and free agent pitching is with the offensive climate such as it is, and with runs being so hard to come by, you kind of wonder, is it the smart play to pay for a veteran free agent pitcher? I mean, yes, Max Scherzer is better than Brandon McCarthy, as an example. But with the run-scoring environment, is he that much better? Because McCarthy is going to get, what, 10, 11, 12 million probably a year? Scherzer's going to get 24, 25 million a year.
He's going to get about five more years.
Right, and he's going to have the long commitment. So, I mean, I don't know. With run scoring down as much as it is, I think a team like the Royals is actually in a really good position in free agency because you've got a guy like Brandon McCarthy, who's one of my favorite targets for the Royals this year, for what it's worth. You're going to hear a lot about him and my love of him for the Royals until he signs elsewhere, if he signs elsewhere.
I regularly tweet him about the
– I've seen you do.
About Kansas City, so I'm right on board with it.
No, I've seen you do, but really, I mean, okay, so let's say the Red Sox want Max Scherzer. What's it going to take? 6 years, $150 million maybe?
They were talking on CBS Sports. Boris was thinking like $175 million.
Right. I mean, whatever it is, it's a crazy amount. And so then what's Brandon McCarthy going to get? What do the Royals have to pay Brandon McCarthy? 2 years, $22 million?
I don't even know if you have to go that much
I think the Scott Kazmir deal is kind of a blueprint.
Yeah, but Kazmir was coming off a much better season. If you look at the whole picture of what McCarthy had, it wasn't that great of a season. Yes, he was great in New York, but he was terrible in Arizona.
Oh, that's a good point. But either way, let's say it's 2-20, just for
yeah. Oh, that's it's a no brainer.
So you're paying $130 to $150 million less. Are you what kind of difference in production are you getting? I mean, Scherzer is probably going to be better. Let's be real. But
you're probably giving up a run per game, a run ER, you know, earned run per game.
You think that much?
Yeah. I mean, I think McCarthy's a 4.0 ERA guy and Scherzer's a 3.0.
You think he's a 4.0 ERA guy in front of the Royals defense?
That I don't know. I mean, the same thing goes with Scherzer. I think Scherzer might be Zach Greinke, Cy Young in front of the Royals defense. I think probably a run allowed per nine, you know, the RA nines. It's probably a run allowed per nine, and that's legit, I think. But that ain't worth the 10 to 15 extra million you have to give him. And that's just this year. You're talking another 50 to 75 million extra, actually more than that, 100 and some million extra you're going to have to pay him over the life of the contract. And what's the chances he's healthy for those the entire contract?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, this run scoring environment benefits the small market teams so much because of just that. Or, you know, I'm not saying that this is a better option, but Carlos Villanueva. Not that I want the Royals to sign him. I did a couple of years ago, don't get me wrong. But the difference between Carlos Villanueva and Brandon McCarthy, let's even go that step, is that much different? You can get Villanueva for $6 million probably, $4 million. I don't know. And I'm not saying you want to do that because then you're getting really far away from elite pitching. But it allows you to go out and get guys who maybe aren't quite as good for a lot less money.
Well, I just think the whole environment is – it just breeds to teams that are good scouting teams and good and what the Royals do especially well, because you could go out and sign a Nelson Cruz, okay, and he hits 40 home runs. You can't guarantee that. He gets 320, but he gives up so many runs in right field. Well, why not start your prospect right fielder who maybe hits 10, 15 home runs, but he goes out and saves you another, you know, run a week. That's a, and you're paying him, what, $10 million less per year? I think teams are going to start looking at their prospects and figuring out, hey, can this guy, can he just hang with the bat like Lorenzo Cain? Can he hit me 250 to 280, but really go fetch it enough in the outfield and save me so many runs that I don't have to go out and pay the big money to this free agent stick?
Yeah, the only issue with that is, yes, a run saved is similar to a run scored, but I'd rather be up 5-3 than 2-1 or 2-0 even. So, you know, it's psychologically, I feel like. But I do agree with what you're saying, and the way the game is going, it's harder to get to 5-3.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Is like, yeah, Nelson Cruz, he hit 40 home runs in Baltimore. Okay, but now you put him in a different park. He's probably, what, 30 home run guy, 25, yeah. 35, and he's aging, and you've paid him a lot more. I mean, to me, the Royals should be looking at, okay, Lorenzo Cain. We've got Lorenzo Cain. There's no reason to give that guy a contract extension. We have control of him at 31. His legs are going to start to go downhill at that point. Who do we have in our system that we can take and put in it? Yeah, who's next? Who can go out and run and fetch it? And, yeah, they're probably not going to hit 300 and have a 330 to 340 on-base percentage, but we can live with that if they can just hang with the bat. If they can be, it's back to 70s and 80s baseball is what it is.
Yeah, no, you're right to some extent. I think that I would like to see the Royals get a little more thump because
I would, but in this run environment combined with playing in Kauffman Stadium, it's going to be, and the biggest problem too is with defensive shifts. The days of the 80s baseball where they played straight up and you had a double as soon as you get to hit it to the gap, that's gone. Now these center fielders they're over in that area. I think that's been the biggest problem with Billy Butler's decline in offense is that those outfielders are better positioned and what Billy used to hit for doubles just isn't available to him anymore.
Oh, I think you're dead on about that. Now, you bring up Billy Butler. That's a good topic to get to. We'll talk about this for a couple minutes before we get to JJ. So obviously they declined his $12.5 million option, paid him out a $1 million option payout. I can't think of the word there because I'm stupid. But I was listening to Parkins and Carrington today on 610 Sports, and Jeff Passan was on and mentioned that he thinks that if Billy Butler called Dayton Moore today and said, all right, I'll do 2 years and $12 million, Dayton Moore would say, done. Let's get it done. What do you think about that? Do you think he would do it?
I think he would. I think that'd present too much value for Dayton to turn it down. That's good value. And that's what I mentioned to somebody on Twitter. You know, I forget who it was. I think it was JD Sussman. Said that $12 million doesn't seem like that bad of an option for Billy Butler. And I said, well, how many years are you talking about here? That's what I see his value is 2 years, $12 million. But it'll be difficult for him and his agent, I think, to check that ego at the door. The guy's made eight and a half last year. And
yeah, I mean, he finished a $30 million deal.
Yeah, he had a down year, but he's used to making more than that, but he's got to look at – I think he's got to look at the situation and say, I want to be – if how badly do I want to be here? And where am I possibly going? I don't see a market for the guy other than maybe Seattle, and what's he going to get there? If they know that, hey, there's only one other team bidding against us, well, then they're going to give him a depressed value even worse, so –
yeah, and if you're Billy Butler and you're going to get 2 years and $12 million from somebody, why not stay here where you love it?
Yeah, exactly. And where you've already played for a World Series and you think that you can make another run. And I think 2 years is the perfect amount because then at the end of that contract, then you got to start looking for places for Sal to hit. You know, he's got to play some first base and possibly, I mean –
but, you know, and so the thing about Butler, To me, I'm not sure the Royals do say yes. I think that, yeah, it's great value, but I don't – they seem pretty darn committed to not having a set DH. And a guy that they're talking about, that you, there's a lot of smoke around Torii Hunter to the Royals, and it makes a lot of sense from knowing this organization. And I wonder if they want to do something like bring back Aoki for $4 or $5 million and sign Hunter for $8 million. And they'd rather do that than get Billy Butler for $6 million.
Perhaps. I just think Billy presents better value than Torii Hunter. They might not see that. Might not see it that way. Torii Hunter to me is, I don't know, that's just them going, that's them going for that good, you know, good clubhouse guy, the guy they missed out on. And
it's been trying to basically bring back Raul Ibanez, but with the intent of playing him every day.
Yeah, I'm not excited about it. I don't like him. I don't like him in that park. I think it hurts your defense because Ned probably is not gonna push him aside as much as he does other than Nori Aoki, you know.
I'm with you.
I'm not really even excited at bringing Aoki back, to be honest with you.
I don't love that either. I'm just saying I feel like the Royals are so excited about the flexibility that they can now have at DH to put Perez there, which I don't agree with, to give Kane's legs a day off but keep his bat in the lineup, which if he hits like he did this year, great. If he hits like he did in 2013, then that's silly too. Even give Moustakas a day at DH, which, again, he's not a good hitter. The problem is the Royals don't have good hitters.
No, that's the thing. It's like I said before we got on this run of love for the Royals' love, is that Sal Perez at DH is a terrible option.
Yeah.
I mean, and the way he hit the last 3 months of the season is a brutal option. You never start that guy.
To be fair, I looked at this. His first half numbers, you look at that offense, if you've got that at DH in 2014, 2015, the way the offense is, it's not terrible. He wore down. It's very clear he wore down. And then you look at how well he hit in the World Series after he had some days off. You know, it's a situation where they've just got to get Perez some rest, because the guy needs to sit a little bit. He gets tired. And to me, that's why I think one of the biggest things in the offseason is to find a guy who can catch 40 or 50 games and give Perez that time off. The thing is, people say, oh, and Perez just won a Gold Glove. But he has his deficiencies defensively. He's not a very good pitch framer. He sometimes gets lazy on balls in the dirt. He's got a great arm, no doubt, and he's a very good defensive catcher. But to assume that you can't do without him for 40 games is just silly. And a guy, A.J. Ellis, is a guy who's probably a non-tender candidate. If the Royals, they had interest in him a few years ago, if the Royals could bring him in as a backup catcher and he caught the other 40 games, you'd have the best defensive catching tandem in baseball. And that might help Perez's value. Maybe then he could DH and you wouldn't feel so bad about it.
No, they definitely need that. They need a new backup catcher. Or they just need to let Kratz play more.
See, I think Kratz might be okay doing it.
I think he'd be fine. But you gotta give somebody, you gotta get Perez time off. I mean, that was evident.
Start 146 games again.
No, and especially after doing it this last year. You gotta go to Ned and say, here, I understand you love him and you never want him out of the lineup, but if he catches more than 120 games, we're gonna fine you.
Yeah.
That's just the facts. That's Dayton needs to go and do that. So they either need to go find a catcher that Yost is more comfortable with, or yeah, they need to. That's just the facts. That's it. That's end of story. If they don't make a move, then Kratz has to catch more. But
well, and there's some guys who can do it. You know, Nick Hundley's out there. Giovanni Soto's out there. David Ross is out there. Again, AJ Ellis might be out there. There's some talk that Russell Martin might sign with the Blue Jays, and if he does, then Diana Navarro might be out there. There are guys who you'd feel comfortable catching 40 times a year.
Yeah, there's – you should feel comfortable with almost anybody catching 40 times a year in this run environment.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
As long as he's got any defensive catcher, you should be comfortable with, because they don't have to. As long as they hit better than Jason Nix, you'll be fine. The other guy that you could look at in that kind of swing role you're talking about, DH outfields, he costs a lot more, but is Melky Cabrera. If you're okay with giving up that, if you have internal pitching options that you're comfortable with and you don't have to go out and grab a starting pitcher, which I'm not totally convinced they have to do. It's not something I think that they're locked in that they have to do. If obviously there's guys, Brandon Finnegan, they're going to have to be sure of can start. Other guys in the system, they got to be sure of that can start. But if you like, you go out and you get yourself maybe a Jason Hamill that doesn't cost you a ton, but he kind of fills that fifth role. It's got to remember, they're playing in front of this defense. So you can go out and get a Jason Hamill that's wasn't great with the Oakland, but he was decent with the Cubs. And you put him in front of this defense in this park, and he should be able to perform decently well until of Sean Manaea, Kyle Zimmer, or somebody is ready to go and then get pushed to the side.
Well, or you can go out. There's other options, too. I mean, the Blue Jays are reportedly rumored to be dangling J.A. Happ.
Yeah, you can go out and make a trade. J.A. Happ.
But in front of this defense, he'd probably be pretty good.
The Reds are the Reds have four players that they're looking to move. I mean, they have four starting pitchers, and they're willing to move one of them. So, and all four of them are pretty solid starters. You can get a Mike Leake, a Matt Latos. I mean, I wouldn't want to take on Latos money, but
Leake seems like the best option, or the most likely option, mm-hmm. just because the Royals have been connected to him. I think they were going to draft him, right?
There was talks about he was one of the guys, and then they went and plucked him early.
Yeah. So, Leake is a guy. Watch out for that. I could see him as a Royal next season.
Yeah, I could totally see them. The Reds, I think they're looking for relief or outfield depth. Well, you pitch them Greg Holland and maybe a fourth outfielder, then you got yourself Mike Leake. I think that's a great move for the Royals.
Man, can you imagine Greg Holland and Aroldis Chapman in the back of a bullpen?
That's what I don't understand, why the Reds are looking for relief help. They got Broxton and Chapman. It's not like they need a bridge. I mean, they've got a good 8-9 man, but I guess they're looking at a Royals blueprint of going 7-8-9. So yeah. So yeah, that's I think the Reds would fit very nicely. Other guys, maybe. I don't know what Edison Volquez would cost you. Probably not a ton. Mm-hmm. He had a nice bounce back season. Again, you put him in front of the Royals defense. He probably doesn't get a major upgrade. That Pirates defense is very good, but he doesn't cost you a lot. AJ Burnett is maybe just a 1-year deal. We were real hot on him last year. I'm obviously cooled a little bit this year off him. He walks so many hitters.
Yeah, you walk guys, the defense can't help you.
Yeah. Go back to Irvin Santana. I don't know what it would take to get him. If you're talking 2-year deal, maybe you look at that. The Royals pitched him a 2-year deal last year. If they go back to him and say, here, our 2-year deal's right there for you this year, does he take it?
Yeah, maybe. The question is, do you want to spend – it's probably going to take 2 and 28. Do you want to spend $14 million on Irvin Santana?
I don't know. I don't, it matters how confident.
Yes, he's probably worth it. But the fact is, you've got to fit a 25-man roster in that $100 million payroll.
Yeah, I'm probably looking at guys on 1-year deal, to be honest with you. And for myself, I'm looking outside the box as far as on players, that position players. That guy over in Korea is pretty good power. I forget his name. It's like Jung Ho or something like that.
Infield third baseman?
Yeah, shortstop. He plays short over there. They think he's probably a third baseman or right fielder. Man, maybe that guy's a right field option that you can get cheap. I mean,
maybe he's your answer, yeah.
Yeah, and he's right-handed hitting. So at worst, maybe he's a platoon bat with Moose that you can tell Moose that, oh, we're not bringing him into platoon with you. He's going to play right field, but then he ends up platooning a little bit as well.
Yeah.
and he's got some pop. I think that's a good option. It's not going to cost you a ton. And if it doesn't work out for the guy, again, it's not going to cost you a ton.
So, I think the postseason will allow them to have enough of a payroll hike.
Mm-hmm.
They can make a mistake and not be just crippled.
Yeah, and I think there's trades out. There's trades out there to be made too.
Yeah, you wonder about. I hate to go back to the Blue Jays, but would they be willing to do something with Jose Bautista? He's getting up there in years. And they're trying to win too, so it might not. They're not rebuilding right now, so they might not be willing to. But he'd be a great fit on this team.
Yeah, and the Angels are talking about flipping Kendrick or Freeze, and I don't think they'd be great fits on this club. I mean, David Freeze might, as a guy who could DH a little bit, play a little bit of third base.
Yes,
sit. He's going to cost you a lot of money, but he can do both roles. And he's opposite. And I don't know if he could play some right field. Maybe he could play it. So it'll be interesting. We'll talk about it all off season long. And
my biggest hope is, and we talked about this on Twitter, there was one day last year where stuff happened, and the rest of the off season was just boring. I'm hoping that is not the case this year.
Yeah, I'm hoping it's not all in one day, but let's bring in JJ, and we'll catch you guys on the rebound.
We now welcome in JJ Piccolo, the assistant general manager for the American League champion Kansas City Royals. JJ, how are you? How does that sound?
Well, sounds good. Sound a little bit better if we were World Series champs, but it was a good experience for everybody, and proud that we won the American League.
Yeah, no, that was a tough way to lose in Game 7. You know, just we all have our emotions as fans, but tell everybody what you guys are going through in the front office, what you're feeling when during that whole Game 7, the triple or the Little League triple, all that good stuff.
Well, truthfully, we are fans. You know, at that point of the year, you realize there's not a whole lot you can do. You're sitting in the stands, you're watching the game just like everybody else. You may be a little bit closer to what's going on behind the scenes, but you're pulling for guys just like you did when you were a kid. You know, it doesn't matter who gets the hit or how they get the hit. You just want to be productive and score some runs and hold the opposition to less runs. But our front office really embraced the entire experience that we had, and we learned a lot from it. It's made us even more hungry to come back and put a productive team on the field for 2015, and knowing that we've got a bulk of the guys coming back. So it was great all around. But as you said, it's a little tough to deal with right now, but we'll use it as motivation moving forward.
JJ, you talk about giving up less runs, and it was just announced a few minutes ago that Alex, Eric, and Sal won Gold Gloves again this year, and you talk about that preventing of runs, and I think that's what stood out to the nation as they watched this team. How much of that was built on your guys' idea, and how much of it was just good fortune to get good athletes?
Well, from day one, Dayton made a point to our scouting department, both professional and amateur, that we need to pitch and play good defense. And that was a staple of what we were looking to do every year. And I think as we got used to our ballpark in Kansas City, and we realized it's just not your catcher, your shortstop, and your center fielder like our original model, we need plus defense in the corners as well, with our outfield being as spacious as it is. Fortunately, you know, Dayton came to our player development system and went to Rusty Kuntz and talked about moving Alex to left field and how that may be a benefit. I don't think we envisioned him winning, you know, multiple Gold Gloves initially, but we soon realized he is very talented out there, and I think it took some pressure off of his bat, and I think he became a more productive offensive player. But what we continue to see is one way we can stay in the games, a place where pitchers would like to pitch and have that type of defense behind them, it became more and more something we wanted to achieve, and it became more important with each passing year. So we spend a lot of time talking about defense, and when you start seeing some of the stats that were put up throughout the playoffs about our outfielders, some individuals having more defensive runs saved than collective teams, you realize how impactful that is. And, you know, ultimately you can relate that to that may be the way we hit home runs. If we can prevent runs and not necessarily hit balls over the fence ourselves, you know, it may be a way to beat opponents. And it's been interesting the way it's played out, and it's going to be a model that I'm sure we'll continue to follow.
Now, heading into the offseason, obviously the pitching and defense is kind of the trademark of this team and what got the Royals to the postseason. And is that going to continue to be a major focus, or would you be willing to sacrifice some offense in, say, right field where there's kind of an opening right now for a little defense, or is it all defense still?
Well, it's a question we're working through right now. I think we've seen the defensive model work, and so much of what we're able to do is what's available, and whether it be economically available or via trade. And as much as we'd like to get our hands on certain players that are out there in the major leagues, it's not always possible to do that. So, you know, we're going to continue. One thing we do know, whether you're an offensive club or not, pitching is going to be a major factor in how many games you're going to win every year. So the pitching part of it will never go away. And if there comes a time where we feel like there's an offensive player that maybe we can sacrifice, we certainly will look at it. But at least for the time being, you know, we're going to continue to follow the model. And some of it will be influenced just based on the pool of players that are available to us. But we'll continue to talk about that this offseason. And we got to look at our payroll and try to figure out, exactly what we can do, what we have available. And in the end, we want to have the most complete team possible. And you may be a little bit weaker in one area if need be, because you're strengthening another area. So that puzzle will continue to be put together, and we'll work on it diligently, you know, throughout this offseason.
Obviously, Yordano Ventura had a huge season for you guys, and going forward, he's going to be a big part of the puzzle. But you've got other young pitchers to maybe take over for James Shields. Who are the guys that you guys are looking for to stay in-house, maybe keep the payroll down to take that fifth spot or at least compete for it during spring?
Well, we have a few guys that are in the upper ends of the minor leagues that we think are getting close to the upper ends of the minor leagues and may come quickly. You know, the guy a lot of people have asked about is Kyle Zimmer, just with his procedure he had done last week. We're very optimistic and very happy with the findings in his procedure that he'll be able to pitch and pitch productively in 2015. Obviously hasn't pitched in the major leagues just yet, but we know he's capable of doing that. And it's a matter of just getting him healthy and on the mound. So we have very high hopes for Kyle Zimmer. Brandon Finnegan is very interesting in that he's a very atypical career path so far. But with his ability and knowing what our amateur scouts thought of Brandon as a starting pitcher, we certainly are going to stay open-minded to him winning a spot in the rotation next year, or at the very least helping us in the rotation next year, knowing that as we get down the home stretch, if he's not in the rotation, we know what he can do out of the bullpen. But we view him very much as a starter. And the other guy that we think, you know, can certainly help us and we're counting on is Aaron Brooks. He had a tremendous year in AAA. He had the rough outing in the major leagues, but that's certainly not indicative of Aaron's abilities. He got better through the month of August and really was pitching as well as he had all year, late in the year. And he's somebody we'll count on as well. So we think between those three guys, they could be potential help for us right now. And then you got guys like Almonte and Manaea, Glenn Sparkman, that were all in the A ball levels this year, that, you know, our experience has been that guys get through A ball. Once they get to double A, they kind of dictate the pace in which they'll get to the major leagues. And there's a lot of guys that move quickly through AA and AAA because they've thrown enough minor league innings, and you feel confident in their maturity level. And I think those guys, those three, even with Manai and Sparkman only finishing their first year, our guys, we think, could do that. So we feel like we've got some depth in our starting pitching that we can count on in the next year, year and a half.
Now, coming into the 2014 season, it kind of sounded like Kyle Zimmer's path was pitching the minors once he got started in May at the time, obviously, and contribute to the big league team in July, August, so as you can kind of manage some innings for everybody. Is that a similar path that you see for Manaea this season, or is he just kind of on a choose-his-own-adventure type path?
Yeah, well, I think he'll be in our projected rosters. You know, certainly in 2016 is when you start really figuring him into it. But I think with the progress he made and just the feedback from Steve Luber, our pitching coach in Wilmington, and Steve Foster, who we just lost today to the Colorado Rockies, the confidence that they have and the observations they've made with his improvements through the year, we do have reason to believe he'll figure things out a little bit more quickly than we might have thought he would going into April. He grew up a lot. He matured quite a bit. So I think we wouldn't be incorrect in having that optimism that he could be on the same type of path as Kyle. I think the difference was Kyle had been out pitching, and we had seen him previous to this past season, where Sean, it was his first year that we saw him in our uniform and first professional pitches he was throwing. But, you know, certainly both guys have high ceilings, you know, bright futures ahead of themselves, and will be part of what we're doing.
You talk about in-house solves on the pitching side. What about in right field? That seems to be a spot now that Aoki's a free agent. Is there any in-house options that you'll be looking at in right field?
Well, we have two guys on the roster. One we just added the other day, and Paulo Orlando. We just had another career path that isn't the most typical path, but Brazilian player with a lot of tools that, you know, we think keeps getting better. I think the sports hernia injury he had 2 seasons ago really kind of set him back, and he lost a year. And, you know, once he came back the following season and was healthy from the get-go, we keep seeing improvements. And we talk about defense and speed and being able to steal a base. Paulo fits all of those categories very well. Lane Adams is another guy. We're optimistic about his ability to help our big league team next year. Tremendous defender, tremendous runner. Another late bloomer, was a basketball player. Cut out of the same mold as Paulo, and that their baseball experience was minimal when they had signed professional contracts. And then the other guy who was in Double A is Jorge Bonifacio. Jorge didn't have a tremendous year this year, but he's too good of a hitter for us not to believe that he's going to help our big league team. He's a great competitor. Strike zone awareness is very good, and he's very young in Double A. So I think with a starting the 2015 season in Double A, we'll give him a chance to get his feet on the ground and gain some confidence again, and we should expect big things out of Jorge as well.
Now, we're talking about minor leaguers who can come up and take some ABs and innings pitched for the Royals in 2015, but, I mean, the AL champions, there has to be some attractiveness to free agents, right? These guys probably want to play for the Royals now. Wouldn't you believe that?
Yeah, I think that'll be the case. I think, you know, that'll be an interesting process we'll go through this year because, you know, in the past, when maybe the following season wasn't looking as promising as 2015 well for the Royals, you know, the veteran-type players who maybe on the back end of their career want to get with teams that they think they can get to the playoffs and ultimately win a World Series. So I think that pool of players will be more open to us than it's been in the past. I think the atmosphere that everybody saw on TV will have an impact on free agents as well. But, you know, ultimately the free agent class and the free agent pool and decisions that are made will be based on finances, you know, so all things being equal, we'll still be in the game. If other clubs, you know, make better offers, you know, I think the tendency is obviously for the player to go where they can do what's best for their family. But I think we are more attractive. I think we've got a nucleus of players that we're not looking to fill 5 spots in order to be competitive. We're looking to fill a couple spots to repeat what we did this year and hopefully have a better outcome in the end. So I think the conversations with the players and the agents this year will be more entertaining and more positive for all of us.
Big offseason or big postseason by Lorenzo Cain, Eric Hosmer, and Mike Moustakas. How do you get them to focus and carry that on to a 162 game regular season? Is that possible, or is it just lightning in a bottle and they've got capabilities?
Well, I think we've all known about their abilities, their ceiling. You know, that's been well documented and written about and talked about over the last several years. And now that they've done it and they've tasted it, I think players mature quite a bit through the playoff. I think our players matured just in that one wild card game because they had a different approach to the game, a fearlessness that you need to play this game, a sense of confidence that they didn't have collectively. I think we've seen the individuals go through their highs before, but collectively, guys were very locked in. It was about the team winning first, and that was ultimately, the biggest predictor of a team's success. And they felt that bond. And for a lot of them, they had done it together in the minor leagues before. So some of the things, the big hits Moustakas got and Hosmer got in L.A. in particular, we've seen them do that before in the playoffs. It was just on the minor league stage instead of the major league stage. But the world got a chance to see them. I think they embraced the moments. They enjoyed it. And they did well with it. They ran with it. It's really, I wish we could bottle it up and try to figure that out. But on the biggest stage when things can really speed up, for that month, things slowed down for them. And we're very hopeful that that will continue into next year. And you know, the 162 games is tough. You're going to go through your lows. But if they're able to maintain a positive frame of mind, mental approach to the game, those lows should last a shorter amount of games and they'll get going and get back on track again. So this experience for all of them is going to help us in the future.
For a guy like Ventura specifically, do you have any worries about the extra innings he threw in October? It kind of put him probably well over where you guys were hoping he would be.
No, not really. I mean, at some point in a guy's career, they're going to have to make that jump because the 5 month minor league season where we're very, very pitch count oriented. And then going to a 6 month season that turns into a seven month season. If we're going to be in the playoffs, you're going to have somebody that has to make that jump. And Yordano was the guy for us this year. Duffy would have been the guy for us to do that as well, to have a significant increase in innings, but he had the side problem, the lat problem, and but I don't think it's something that we're going to be too concerned with. I think we'll be aware of it going into spring training and maybe the workload, and this is without talking to Dave Island or Ned Yost, the workload may be a little bit lighter in spring training and you start out a little slower with him. But overall, I think Ace showed what his abilities are. Again, another person that gained confidence in what he can do, and I think you just grow from there. I mean, you know, we all know the innings totals for pitchers in this era versus 20 or 30 years ago is significantly less. So there's no reason to think we should put any ceiling on players once they've gotten to the major leagues. So I think we can count on Ace for 200 innings, and we just got to build from there.
During the season, there was a little bit of controversy with the front office. Somebody in the front office mentioning that Kansas City sports writers and the media in general is a little bit tougher on the Royals than the national media is. Then during the postseason, we saw fandom and this city and this team really embrace this city. What did that mean to you guys? And is 80s, 70s love of Royals baseball from the fans, is that all back now with one run?
Right. Yeah, living here since December of 2006 is when my family moved here. I've learned over the 8 years that there's a lot of frustration. And, you know, it's something that we have to acknowledge. The team hadn't been in the playoffs for 29 years. And I think what we saw was a lot of elation from our fans, excitement about what we're doing. I think the local sports writers, they have a job to do, and their job often is to criticize, and we have to accept that. It's not something we can really control. I think at times where we did feel good is when you had some national writers that get snippets of what we're doing and they see improvement. They have a little different view of it because they're covering 30 clubs as opposed to one. So we just, you know, you got to kind of deal with that as it comes. But, you know, I also think we all know our expectations are just as high as fans and media. So with those expectations, we're disappointed at times as well. But, you know, ultimately the city really embraced this team. I heard a lot of great stories from neighbors, from friends about how it's the first time their kids are engaged in the Royals. They can't wait to get home to watch the game. That makes us feel just as good as anything that happened in this postseason, because hopefully we've got a whole new generation of Royals fans, kids that want the Royals to win. Eric Hosmer and Salvador Perez and, you know, all the guys are their heroes. And that gives the tradition of this organization another platform, another stage to build on, and we'll just continue to try to please our fans and please our ownership and everything that we, you know, tried to do when we first came to Kansas City.
You may not know the answer to this question yet, so feel free to tell me to buzz off on it. But do you know what that postseason run has done for season ticket numbers and merchandise sales and all that?
I really don't have any figures. I know there's anticipation that the season ticket holders will go up. You know, I'm sure there's more revenues involved. You know, I've read various reports, but, you know, they weren't internal reports, so I don't know how accurate they are. But, you know, that's really not as much for baseball operations to worry about. You know, we know we're part of a team that's trying to generate a fan base and an interest in a club, and our part in that is just putting a good product on the field. So we'll continue to try to do that. And, you know, if the byproduct is there's more revenues and more people in the seats, then that's a great thing. And it'll be a place that our players will really, really embrace and love to come to work every day. And that's the hope through all of this. And I think we got a taste of it in October.
All right, I've got one more for you, and I think Clint has one more for you. But I just have to ask, do you find yourself wanting to send video clips of Lorenzo Cain to the Rawlings Awards people and just saying, what is wrong with you?
Yeah, I was very disappointed to learn that Lorenzo didn't win a Gold Glove. It's really hard to fathom. I mean, it's not just what he did in the postseason. We saw it all year long. And when you look at some of the statistics that were put up and the highlight reel that you can put together on Lorenzo over the last couple of years, he's worthy of a Gold Glove without question. A little disappointed and surprised that he didn't win one this year. So unfortunately we don't get a vote, and we have to deal with, you know, what the outcome is.
Okay. Final question. And this is just you as a fan, not that Dursley did anything wrong or anything, but were you yelling to go and send him home like I know I was?
I was yelling to go, but it was sheer emotion and excitement and thinking we got a chance to score here. But, you know, as soon as I saw the replay, there was once Crawford did a great, I mean, he handled a tough throw on a short hop. Once he handled that, the only way Alex was going to score is if Crawford threw it up the screen or Posey dropped the ball. I mean, it would have been just real, a desperate move. And Salvi had gotten some big hits through the playoffs, and it just didn't work out this time. But without question, Jersh did the right thing.
Yeah, I agree. So, but yeah, thanks for coming on, JJ, and hope you have a good off season. And I guess you don't ever have an off season, you guys, but have fun.
Yeah, we keep going. We keep going, and we enjoy it. So I appreciate you guys inviting me on, and look forward to talking to you in the future.
Thanks, JJ.
That was JJ Piccolo. Thanks again for joining us on the podcast, and great stuff from him, David. Always just fantastic to talk to a high level exec in the Royals brass. And we talked a little bit about Yordano Ventura. I think you and I agree. It's not shocking that Ventura is not going to win the Rookie of the Year, but it was a little bit, to me, a little bit of a surprise that he got snubbed and didn't make the final three. Is Betances from the Yankees and Shoemaker from the Angels made it.
Yeah, you know, Jose Abreu is the Rookie of the
Year. Yeah, that's who's going to win.
And I think that the fact that they even named finalists for that is a little bit silly because of how good he was. It's just the top three, obviously. But, Ventura, I'm looking at the rookie pitchers right now, and Dylan Betances, 1.40 ERA, 13.5 strikeouts per nine, 2.4 walks per nine, obviously outstanding. And there's a number I look at that, you know, is not quite as outstanding, 90 innings pitched. Great for a reliever, but 90 innings pitched. And then I go to Matt Shoemaker. 3.04 ERA, 16-4 record, about 3.26 FIP. He didn't walk anybody. He struck out a lot of guys. And then I look, 136 innings. Okay, that's pretty solid. And then I look at Yordano Ventura, 14-10 record. So he's got the record that the voters like. 3.20 ERA. That's shiny. Almost 8 strikeouts per nine. Almost 3.5 walks per nine. That's a little bit high. But 183 innings. And so I'm looking at these rookie starters, and I don't think anybody threw more innings than Yordano Ventura. No, they didn't. And then he threw 25 more in the postseason, which didn't count, obviously. But he got snubbed. It's plain and simple. He should definitely be in the top three. And I'm glad I looked it up. I was pretty sure I looked it up, but I thought that I was hoping he didn't have a bonus finishing top three in Rookie of the Year. He didn't. So don't worry about that. But he got snubbed. I think you can make a case for Kevin Kiermaier. Not a great case, but he could have been in there. Danny Santana, I think, was the guy who I think the top three really should have been Abreu, Santana, and Ventura.
Well, no, I mean, if you're going to give it to Shoemaker in his 130-some innings, why don't you give it to Tanaka? 136 innings. 13-5, 2.77 ERA, 140. Yeah, I mean, Tanaka, if he never gets hurt, he's challenging Abreu for that Rookie of the Year slot. Sure. And so that's what I didn't understand. It's, you're going to give it to Shoemaker and Betances, and Tanaka, if he... I mean, for his body of work, his 136 innings were better than Shoemaker's. Now, I'll take Ventura over all of them because he gave you over 180 innings, and that matters. And it's not like it's a big drop-off. I mean, the guy had an outstanding season. All I'll say about it is I hope that Yordano takes this as a snub and works hard and comes back and wins the Cy Young next year.
Yeah, you know what? That's a good point. If the worst thing that happens in Ventura's career is that he got snubbed for Rookie of the Year, I'll take it.
And how cool was that? We didn't talk about this. How cool was that to see Yordano at the slow pitch softball game night after the World Tour?
He is, you know, we talked about Ervin Santana last year, the epitome of cool, all that. Ventura's taken that title. He walked off that mound in Game 6. And I was there, so it was hard for me to see, but I'm watching replay and stuff and watch the game again because you win a World Series game 10-0. You want to watch that game as many times as possible. And I'm watching him walk off the mound, and he seriously looked like he was thinking about what to eat for dinner.
No, he's cool as cool can be. And he caught the ball and then hit it off of his leg like Michael Jackson almost.
Ventura has that's the difference between him and Santana. Santana was just cool. Ventura's
got flair. Has swag. Yeah, he's got flair. He's got swag. He's going to be fun to watch. And that's a guy this offseason that I want to see the Royals spend some money on.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with waiting another year because there were some injury issues. Not big, but the sort of thing you want to make sure doesn't compound. But I also wouldn't be opposed to them giving him the Teheran deal.
No, that's exactly the model, I think. It's the perfect model. I think you go in a little bit lighter with him and say, here, we're not going to give you quite as much as Julio because you had some injury problems that Julio didn't have, you know, say whatever, say whatever you want to. Hit him with a little bit lighter than that contract. Not much that it's an insult, but and see what he says. And it'd be hard for that guy to turn it down. I know that. He's a $28,000 signee. He's most money he's ever made in his life was this year. Even he's got to have that kind of, he encountered two small little injuries. So that would be very, very hard for him to turn any money down.
Yeah, it was just a special season for that guy. And you know, not that we are brilliant or anything like that, because we're quite the opposite. But it's also nice to say, all right, we saw this guy a while back and said, watch out. And a lot of people did. So we're not special in that regard. But it's pretty cool to see a guy we've watched come through the system, get into the major leagues, and do the thing. And perform at a high level, and perform at a high level in the World Freaking Series.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, very, very, very cool. One guy that we didn't expect to be a finalist for any awards was Ned Yost, and he was announced today that he's a finalist with Buck Showalter and Mike Socha. And I like his chances to win. I would definitely put Buck as the favorite, but I would say Ned's right. Ed's an easy number two over Socha.
Well, they all have their points in their favor. You know, Buck Showalter led an Orioles team to a division title by a lot of games in a division that nobody picked them to win. And obviously the voting is done before the postseason, so it doesn't matter that Ned Yost beat both of those managers. Mike Socha, they were down in the division. They overtook the A's and then won the division by 11 games or something like that. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. And so there's that in their favor. But the story of the Royals might be enough. Buck Showalter deserves it, I think, of those three. But the story of the Royals might be enough to have swayed voters.
Yeah, I think first time in 29 years, the narrative that it's the small market Royals, even though they're playing with a much bigger payroll than they used to, I think that narrative speaks very loud, very well to the Royals and how they win games. And even, yes, the voting was done before the postseason, but if you look at who's working with the smallest amount of, on the thinnest string, the thinnest line there, it's got to be Ned Yost. I mean, we might not like his bullpen management, but he did it pretty well for much of the year. And they won a lot of close games. So ultimately, I think Buck wins the award, but I think Ned will get more than his fair share of votes.
Who do you think wins the award, real quick, before we get out of here?
I think Buck wins it.
No, all the awards.
Oh, all the awards? What, NL Rookie of the Year?
NL Rookie of the Year, yeah.
I got to go. I don't know if he'll win it or not, but I'm going to go with Hamilton because that's who I said prior to the season.
I think DeGrom probably wins that. AL Rookie of the Year, we obviously have Abreu. Mm-hmm. AL Manager of the Year, we both have Showalter. NL Manager of the Year, who do you think?
Who are the candidates? I didn't even see.
Bruce Bochy, Clint Hurdle, and Matt Williams.
And it's done before the end of the season, so I'll go with Matt Williams.
That's what I say, too. That's what I said before the season, so I might actually get one right. Cy Young, Felix Hernandez, Corey Kluber, or Chris Sale? I say Hernandez.
Yeah, I'll go with Hernandez, although I wouldn't mind seeing Corey Kluber win it.
I love Corey Kluber. I wish he wasn't an Indian. Yeah. NL Cy Young. Well, let's not even talk about it.
Yeah, anymore. That's Kershaw. That's over.
AL MVP is pretty easy. Brantley Martinez and Mike Trout. Yeah, it's Trout. NL MVP. This is where it gets interesting. You've got Clayton Kershaw, Andrew McCutchen, or Giancarlo Stanton.
I think Kershaw wins it.
I do too, actually. I was looking at that, and I'm thinking, oh, these are all so clear-cut. Then I get to the NL MVP, and I'm going, Kershaw or McCutchen. It's not going to be Stanton. It probably should be. He's probably the best.
McCutchen and Stanton's injuries kind of probably hurt him a little bit, don't they?
Stanton's maybe less so because it was so late. He didn't miss that much time. But, yeah, I think Kershaw probably wins it. Keep in mind, it's funny. Everybody forgets this. Kershaw missed the start of the season.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But he was
so good.
So dominant. And what was Verlander the last pitcher to win both?
Yeah, a few years ago.
Yeah. So
it'll be nice to have a Tiger not win the MVP this year.
It will be. We mentioned earlier the three gold gloves. That was impressive. That's Alex's fourth, David. What's Alex have to do to get his name, his number on the board or on the Hall of Fame?
Good question. And he's got 8 years in Kansas City now. Four of them bad, four of them good. Well, three of them bad, five of them good. Four gold gloves, AL champion. One of two things. He's got to sign an extension either way, because mm-hmm. I don't think he's going to get on that board with two more years in Royal Blue. But assuming he signs that extension, which I think he will, he's either has to keep hitting at this at the composite level of the last 4 years for the next 3 or 4 years, or and keep going after that too at maybe a lesser level and win a couple more gold gloves, or the Royals need to win a title. Yeah. If they go out next year and win the World Series and Gordon puts up the same numbers for four more years, I think number four goes up on the board.
Yeah, I agree. And he's at, right now, he's eighth in all-time baseball reference war. I think he gets as high as number two. If he signs an extension, I think he gets to number two.
Yeah, I would say that's probably about right.
Because he's 19 away from Kevin Apier. Signs a couple-year extension, or maybe a three-year extension. He'll get there. And so I think we'll probably take a couple weeks off, like we generally do in the off-season, Dave. Is that kind of – we going to stick to that
formula? Yeah, if something happens, we'll come back and talk to you guys. But otherwise, I think we're going to enjoy the off season a little bit. We'll be writing for you, obviously. If the Royals make a trade, we'll come and talk to you about it, or make a signing for that matter. But, yeah, I think we're recording on November 4th. I think we'll probably come at you before Thanksgiving again, but maybe not much before Thanksgiving.
Yeah. So, one last prediction, Dave, what's the next move the Royals will make?
Oh, you know, I'm looking at history, looking at what the Royals do, and I can never match what I did after the 2012 or 2011 season when I called the Sanchez for Cabrera trade. We can advance. But based on when Torrey Hunter has signed his last two contracts and what Dayton Moore typically does, I think Torrey Hunter is a Royal within the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, I would I don't like that idea, but I think you're right on.
There's way too much smoke. I mean, he may get it. The Tigers may say, look, Cabrera's not going to be ready to go for opening day. We might lose Victor Martinez. We need you on our roster. And they might re-sign him, and he'd probably stay. But if the Royals come calling with a two-year, $16 million deal, I don't think he turns it down.
I'll go with the Royals announce a contract extension with Yordano Ventura. That's where I'll go.
I hope you're right and I'm wrong.
So we'll see. I won't bet on mine, but I'd probably bet on yours. So
I probably would too, unfortunately.
So thanks again, guys, for listening. We'll come at you in a couple weeks.
You have been listening to a Royals Podcast Network presentation.